The first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
We're back after a week off, and what a weekend it was for Marquette basketball. Good to be with you again here on Scrambled Eggs, everybody, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CrackSidewalks.com. Phil, did you have a good little vacation?
I did. I got some bluebird skiing in with nice powder, and had quite a few Colorado-based beverages, and got to get back in time.
What was your favorite out there? Colorado beverages.
Well, I would say if you're into sours, Crooked Stave had some great ones. And then my favorite just kind of socially sitting around beer was Denver Brewing's Graham Cracker Porter. It was delicious. I wish I had one of those to celebrate yesterday's victory, to be sure.
Yeah, I just have my Texas beer. Well, actually, it's a Kansas City beer that I have to celebrate mine. I just think my go-to is the Boulevard Unfiltered Wheat, but
enough about beer.
Maybe we could talk more about beer if the season goes to hell. But right now, it's a good time to talk about basketball because Marquette coming off one of its best wins of the season, an emotional win on National Marquette Day over the defending national champions, Villanova Wildcats, 66-65. Phil, you were in the arena. I was at a watch party. What was it like to be at the Fiserv Forum for a big win over Villanova?
It was awesome. The arena really lived up to its billing and kind of generating a crazy atmosphere. The crowd was into it. It was even more kind of energized than, say, the Wisconsin game. I mean, the Wisconsin game was probably louder, but that's because you had 20% of the crowd were a bunch of red idiots. And they were screaming, so there was lots of energy there, whereas this time it was, by and large, Marquette crowd and very into it. I will say when Nova kind of made its run at the end, the crowd kind of went a little bit quiet, and even Wojo got very excited and kind of got the crowd back into it and kind of motioning for the crowd to get loud and stuff. But it was an awesome environment. I mean, it was the most locked in to a game, like emotionally and like physically, that I've been at in a while for Marquette. So it was a really cool experience.
Yeah, it was just a great National Marquette Day weekend. It was a lot of fun. Of course, the Marquette women won again, so they're staying in the top 10 and still climbing. So it's a good time to be a Marquette basketball fan in general. And, I just love National Marquette Day. I know people outside of the Marquette community may think it's corny that we have our own little holiday, but I think the sense of camaraderie around the country is pretty awesome. It's fun to follow on social media if you're following the Twitter accounts or Instagram of all the Marquette social pages sharing watch parties from around the country. It's fun to see a watch party in Seattle, Washington, and see a familiar face. Like, hey, I know that person. I went to school with them. And,
right.
So, and just see everybody who's watching the game around the country. I think it's a lot of fun. So, I was at the watch party in Dallas. We had a great crowd there. We had probably more people than we've ever had for a watch party in Dallas. And it looked like there were some great crowds in a bunch of other cities around the country. And, yeah, we had a lot of fun watching the game. And, when Villanova did make that run, there was a sense of anxiousness in the room, probably the same as in the arena. But I just had this feeling like they can't let this slip away. And, Villanova, to their credit, they've really found their footing, and they do look like a team that can make a run in March. But to hold on and win that game was so important, Phil, because, if Nova wins that game, the Big East race is done. Because I don't think anybody's catching Villanova with, a three-game lead with seven to play. But now that you're back to within one game with seven to play, it's at least a race, and you're going to have another shot at Villanova.
Yeah. Well, and that was the thing. I was shockingly surprised, before I don't want to jump into the individual moments within the Villanova game too quickly. But like you said, you kind of had this weird confidence that they weren't going to give it all the way back, even though Villanova was making a run. I honestly, Sam Hauser had the shot from the corner when Marquette was up, I want to say six, with like a minute 10, minute 15 left.
Yeah, like I had my hand in the air, like that's the dagger, that's going to end it.
And yeah, I was convinced that was going in. I had this sense of calm because I'm like, there's no way this does not go in. And well, I guess the Housers just didn't have a didn't have a heck of a day, so it didn't go, and Nova came back and hit a three. But I think you know, you mentioned it, and we talked about it a little earlier in the pod. You know, we can talk about whether this luck or you know, the team being tough or whatever, but they're finding ways to win close games, and I think winning close games earlier in the season paid off here, because there really wasn't – I wasn't panicked. I don't know that the team was panicked, right? Like, to get a defensive stand against Villanova, who is, you know, a top 25 program this season and certainly a top 10 historical program over the last decade – that's a great win, right?
Yeah. You know, I wish they would have closed out a close win on Tuesday, but we can worry about that later. But, yeah, it was nice to close that out. And yeah, I think in moments like that, I think the team's leadership shows, the team's experience shows, and the improved defense shows. I mean, they had to get a stop, and, you know, I thought that Villanova was going to get that last basket. You know, I thought, you know, Booth had a look at the rim, and I thought he was gonna seal it, but you know, he pulled it back out, and they weren't able to even get a shot off. And I think part of that is just Marquette's defense. Morrow was right there. I think there was a bit of an intimidation factor. He didn't want to put the shot up. Thought it was gonna get blocked, and so they actually ended up winning the game with some defense at the end.
Yeah, well, that very last play. I mean, I went back and watched the last 5 minutes of the game on replay, because obviously I was live and didn't always have the best view. That last play was interesting because Howard and Sakar kind of got switched onto Booth on the play, and then, like, I don't know if they miscommunicated or what, but all of a sudden Howard went back to, and I can't remember what number two's name is for Villanova. But whoever Howard was guarding, all of a sudden he sprinted to go guard his guy, and Sakar was semi out of position, and Booth kind of went, oh my God, there's a lane there. Like, he almost kind of hesitated, like, how are they going to leave me this open for the drive? And he took it, and Ed Morrow has had maybe not like a greatest end to end season or a continual, but he has had probably three or four of the best defensive plays that Marquette has come to count on. You know, that I have no doubt that Booth didn't go up for a layup because Ed was right there. And he kind of took it under and had no better chance. You had the Ed block of Hap, with like 35 seconds left, against Wisconsin that kind of forced that game to go to overtime. So, I think that's a sign of a talented team that up and down the roster, it's not, you know, one could argue Marcus made a couple of bad plays there, right? He turned the ball over the possession before and then kind of left Booth open for that drive. So we're not having to count on just Marcus or just the Housers, who were 2 of 10. We're getting contributions up and down the roster, which is it bodes well for March.
It absolutely does. By the way, number two is Colin Gillespie, was the guy you're trying to think of.
Oh, thank you.
But, you know, I'm really glad that Marquette held on, because I would really, really hate to be having a topic on this week's show of two rough end-of-game moments for Marcus Howard. Because otherwise that would be the topic that we would have to at least touch on, even though he scored 38 points in the Villanova game, because obviously he missed the shot at the end of the St. John's game. He wasn't able to. It looked like he kind of shied away from contact and wasn't able to get that shot to fall. That last play against St. John's kind of broke down on him. Looked like he lost his handle for a minute, then the play just fell apart from there. And then he had the bad turnover. He lost the ball and gave Villanova a chance to win the game. But fortunately, Villanova missed the shot. We don't have to talk about that, and we can continue to talk about the greatness that is Marcus Howard. Yeah, not perfect, but was certainly, certainly good enough. Overall, a great week, leading Marquette to a big win over Villanova, and he climbed up to 6th on the Marquette all-time scoring chart. Among the names he's passed in the past week, Darius Johnson Odom, Bo Ellis, Wesley Matthews, Tony Smith, Brian Wardle, and Travis Diener. He's only 5 spots from the top. Butch Lee, Dominique James, George Thompson, Lazar Hayward, and then, of course, Jarrell McNeil, number one at 1,985 points. And, you know, Howard, you know, I don't know if you were able to catch College Game Day, but it was there was a really good feature by Marquette's own Jen Latta, by the way, on Marcus Howard. And his mental preparation Actually, there were two really good features this week. There was also a really good feature on him on The Athletic on Wednesday from Brian Hamilton. That's also a really good read about his how he prepares. But I thought the feature on that Jen did on ESPN was interesting because it really didn't focus much on him as a player as much as it did how he tries to get his mind right. And it was about mental health and how he kind of deals with the pressure of being not just a student athlete but the face of a program. And how he doesn't let that pressure get to him, because whether he likes it or not, he is the most recognizable name on the team. He's getting national attention, whether it's stories on ESPN or articles on The Athletic. Everyone looks at it. It's Marquette led by Marcus Howard, right? It's like that's right. The first name the average college basketball fan would know. Marcus Howard, Marquette. They're almost kind of hand in hand. Name one, you name the other. And the way he kind of handles that pressure by talking to a therapist and making sure his mind is right, so then he can get into the preparation. So if you take the, you know, Jen's story and Brian Hamilton's story, I think it was two really good looks at what makes Marcus who he is, both taking care of his mental health, one, and then the way he, with his mind right, approaches his preparation for the week, kind of taking responsibility as a leader on this team, setting the tone in practice, going over things with Wojo, just the two of them at times, to make sure he's done everything to prepare this team every week. I thought it was a great week of pub for Marcus Howard if you're trying to, you know, get his name out there and get people to, you know the person behind the name. I thought the coverage of him this past week was pretty good. And I don't know if you read the article, saw the story, Phil, but I thought we got a pretty good look away from the court about Marcus Howard this past week.
Yeah, no, I thought it was great. It's good coverage. It's good to see kind of Marcus as a whole player, right? Like not just this prolific scorer, but someone both on and off the court who demonstrates leadership, you know, both by example and overtly. It's good stuff. Like I said, it's great time to be a fan of the program. You almost kind of want to take it as a personal motto. You know, Marcus's, I thought it was very insightful. His, you know, you get wins, there are no losses. There's the, you just get lessons learned and, you know, and even in the victory over Villanova, right? There's probably some lessons learned. How did he, you know, he got a little sloppy with the handle against Bay and got swiped. Maybe could do things differently on the defensive end. Just another remarkable performance from him against Villanova. And was a solid performance against St. John's. The team just generally overall lacked energy. We kind of talked about that from a, you know, a standpoint of needing to recover. It's been a long season. And it just bit them. But I mean, where they are now, you know, it's the 10th of February, right? With 11 out of the 18 conference games behind them, and they're 9-2 so far. I think we all would have taken that before the season started, and to get that win against Villanova, it at least puts pressure on Villanova that they have to continue to perform. Because I think you're right. If Villanova had won this game, you know, the race was essentially over, and Nova maybe not quite coasted, but basically could have cakewalked to the regular season Big East championship. And now it's a little more competitive, to be sure.
Yeah, and if you're doing the math, Phil, what were the numbers on what Marcus Howard has to do to become Marquette's all-time leading scorer this season?
Yeah, so if to do it in the regular season, so with 7 games left in the regular season, he would have to average 27.9 points to get it in the regular season.
That's like all total. In 7 games, you'd have to like.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. I did the math wrong. I looked at the wrong number. No, he'd actually have to have 37.9.
In the regular season, but if you add potential for some postseason games, it becomes attainable.
Yes, correct. So if he goes to about 10 games, let's 7 regular season and then some combination of 3 postseason, he's at about 27.9 points a game to be able to break the record, and 3 postseason games seems kind of the bare minimum. So I think it's definitely achievable. I mean, he's averaging about 27 points a game right now, or actually 25.2, but that counts the Georgetown 0-pointer. So he's averaging probably around 26. So it's not outside the realm of possibility. It's just going to be interesting. I mean, and for every extra game they get in the postseason, that gives him more space. And it would be kind of crazy, even if they, you know, even if they get four, maybe five postseason games, for him to get that scoring record in 3 years in the modern era just seems insane.
You know what I was thinking about? Like, what I don't want to happen is for him to set the record in the game that ends Marquette's season.
Yeah, that would
like,
suck.
Like, you know, like say he goes into a second round game in the NCAA tournament just 3 points away and he gets it, but they lose the game and there won't even be time to celebrate because the whole focus will be that the team's out, the season's over. He'll be down in the dumps because his team lost and he won't be wanting to talk about anything about himself at all. Not that he likes talking about himself after wins either, but at least if they won the game, then he can at least celebrate and enjoy it, and like they could celebrate him. And otherwise, because if he sets it in the game that ends the season, we really won't be able to celebrate it until next year, like the first home game next season. I mean, I'm for sure they'd probably do something on campus, but as far as in a basketball setting with a lot of people there,
yeah. Well, I mean, I mean, how much do you want him to set it? Like at this point, it's basically guaranteed he's not going to set the record unless he goes ballistic. He's not going to set the record in a home game, you know. And it's most likely going to be in a postseason game if he sets it. How? I mean, obviously, if they're going all the way to the national championship or something like that, he's setting the record. Like that's just a given. But assuming he comes back next year, would you almost rather he set the record like, you know, the first or second? You know, I would assume like the first game of the season next year.
Maybe I'm thinking about it too much as far as where I want him to set it. I just would love to see him have it. I guess my point is I would like for at least him to be able to enjoy it when he does, right?
Right.
Because like I would like for Marquette to win the game in which he sets it, so at least like he would not be thinking about the loss and how what he could have done to help his team win. Right. I just when Marcus Howard breaks the record, I want him to be able to celebrate it. That's good. I guess that's what I'm trying to get out of it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think that's the right idea is you do want to you want to enjoy it because he will never enjoy an individual record if it involves a team loss.
Yeah, and assuming he comes back for his senior season, he would have a shot to be the Big East's all-time leading scorer. And he could actually really shatter it because if he gets to 2,000 career points this season, the career Big East record is Troy Bell at Boston College at 26-32. So basically, if he has the exact same type of season he has this season, then which would be 700, 800 points, he would far exceed it and maybe even have an outside shot at 3,000 career points, which would be crazy. But yeah, so. Marcus Howard has not done setting records, and I just marvel at it because every game, somebody, whether it's Anonymous Eagle or Paint Touches or somebody else on the MUBB hashtag, is throwing out some stats as far as where Marcus Howard stands as far as regular season records, single season records, all-time records. It seems like there's always something new, and I think the one that came across the feed over the weekend that somebody, I think it was ESPN, pointed out that like over the last 20 years, he has as many 35-point games against ranked team as anybody else. He's tied with Buddy Hield and I think Grayson Allen. Maybe it was Grayson Allen. Buddy Hield was definitely one. I forget the other. But four games of 35 or more against ranked teams.
Yeah. So he turns it up when it counts, right? Like another 38 points against Villanova accounted for more than 50% of Marquette's game points. So yep. When the lights are on, he's going to deliver.
Yeah, he is. And certainly hope that continues. But before we move on and talk about the games coming up, Phil, I do want to touch on the Big East as a whole. And we're trying to drag St. John's into the tournament with us, but they just refuse to come with us because we are apparently the only team St. John's gets up for. You look at the Big East as a whole, St. John's has got to be – would you it's safe to say St. John's is the most disappointing team in the Big East?
Oh, by far. Now, it sounds like sour eggs considering they beat us twice, but – I mean, I did say that I thought St. John's was overrated before the season started, so I'm not terribly surprised, like on a personal level, but based on the hype and the way and the talent and the way they performed against Marquette, I am surprised that they have fallen in this low. I don't know how you beat Marquette at home to end a undefeated streak in the Fiserv Forum and then turn around and lose to Providence by double digits at home. Like it's just boggling.
But yeah, it's just a cluster of teams at 5 and 6 fighting for third place, including DePaul. I mean, Butler, St. John's, Seton Hall, Georgetown, and DePaul are all fighting for third place in the Big East, many of them trying to get a spot in the tournament. And, St. John's should be – they have the talent to be in the tournament. They just keep dropping these lousy games. It keeps watering down their resume, and they're not getting in. But, I just don't know what to think about. I guess I'm just kind of a little pissed at St. John's, if I'm being quite honest. Because, if they were to be a tournament team, I think I could get over it a little more. But if they're going to head to the NIT, quite frankly, it pissed me off a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's just a case of, it's weird that they get up for the Marquette game. Like, I don't know what we've done to piss St. John's off, but apparently we have.
Because if they guarded every team's best score the way they guard Marcus Howard, they should probably have 20 wins.
Right. It's bizarre, right? I don't care that they're not great or that they're not going to the tournament. You know, it could be just a matchup problem, right? Like St. John's plays a lot of 5-out, 0-in, which negates some of, the eraser that is Theo John and some of that stuff forces him to play on the perimeter. So I think it's a bad matchup for Marquette more than anything. I guess at this point, it's really a decision point. Do we just say, screw it, even if the Big East just gets two teams, whatever we do, let's maximize Villanova and Marquette's seed. Right. Because that's the concern at this point is, like you said, you've got five teams at 5 and 6, two at 4 and 7, and then Xavier of all teams dead last. But at this point, I really got to wonder if the Big East is going to get more than, say, three teams in, four,
yeah,
probably,
as
but it could
love
be three.
To make fun of the Pac-12. It's not impossible that the Big East and Pac-12 could have the same number of teams in the tournament.
Right.
If somebody other than Washington steps up in the Pac-12, wins their conference tournament, the Pac-12 could have two teams in. The Big East may have two teams in if the rest of the league keeps cannibalizing itself. I would like to think someone is going to emerge over the next 7 games and get to 10 wins in the league, and that should be enough to get a third team in, but I don't have any faith that St. John's is going to do it. Maybe Butler figures things out. Maybe Creighton gets hot. Georgetown is as schizophrenic or as tough to figure out as anybody else. Sometimes they're good, and sometimes they get nothing out of Jesse Govan, and they lose. Seton Hall's all right. I don't know if they're getting in or not. But, it's tough to figure out the rest of the league, but I guess we'll see if anybody can emerge. Phil, you mentioned the seeds, and that is one thing I wanted to touch on, because before – the Marquette-Villanova game on CBS, the NCAA did reveal its seeds for the tournament. I know some of us aren't a fan of the seed reveal, much like the kind of following the pattern of the college football playoff, revealing the seeds week to week just to make it a talking point. But the fact that it is a talking point, and that gives us something to go over here on the podcast, Marquette was revealed as the 12th overall seed, so the last of the 3 seeds, and then they go out and beat Villanova. So pretty good indication that Marquette is trending towards a protected seed, Phil. Anything that jumped out to you about the seed reveal on Saturday?
No, not really. I mean, a 3 seed makes sense, a protected seed. So hopefully that puts us in somewhere like Des Moines
that. Des Moines followed by Columbus, Ohio, and then I guess Tulsa maybe probably be the preferential places for Marquette fans as far as where we have the highest concentration of people who'd be willing to travel to those sites, with Salt Lake City and San Jose probably being the least desirable unless you just want to take a vacation to the Bay Area for the weekend.
Yeah, exactly. As long as we don't end up playing somewhere where we are essentially playing a road game a la South Carolina, Utah State.
You don't, like, not that this would happen, but you don't want to be playing like Nevada in San Jose or something.
Right. Exactly. So no, there wasn't anything shocking. I think a 3 seed makes sense. You know, I'm curious how much that St. John's loss hurt us in that regard. Like, would, if we had beaten St. John's at home, would that have put us closer to a 2 seed, especially with the way Michigan State has been playing of late? I mean, they had 3 losses in a row and we're still, what, the last 2 seed? So would that have influenced things at all? I don't know.
Yeah, it maybe just moved up just a spot or two. I mean, I guess there are so many teams that lose around Marquette, with maybe slightly ahead of them or slightly behind them. They're just, I guess, you're at this point in the season, one loss to a half decent team is not going to plummet your seeding. You know, you
right.
may slide a little bit, but you know, if you're 12th going in and you lose to a team like St. John's, you're not going to drop out of the top 25. You may drop, you know, 3 or 4 spots, because I think at this point in the season, the voters kind of have a good handle on who's good and who's not. And, you know, some losses, I wouldn't say maybe forgivable isn't the right term, but you just kind of acknowledge, hey, losses happen sometime. Let's see if they bounce back, or if they lose 2 or 3 in a row, then maybe we get concerned to reevaluate this team. But sometimes you lose. Marquette was due for a loss.
Yeah.
You know, it had been, they've only lost, what, 2 games in, you know, since the middle of December?
Yep.
So it's in both to the St. John's. But
yeah.
So I guess they were due to drop another one, but not that you want to use the term good loss in any stretch of the imagination. But they were due to have one that didn't go their way, and hopefully that doesn't happen again over the next, at least over the next 3 games. But yeah, I'm with you. I don't know how much higher up Marquette could move. If, you know, other teams ahead of them continue to play the way they have, like the teams ahead of them, obviously Duke is incredible. Tennessee is great. Virginia is awesome. Gonzaga will, you know, we may not know because there's just nobody on their schedule that's going to beat them probably, even if hypothetically if Marquette is better or has better wins, Gonzaga is just going to keep winning. So they're not going anywhere. Michigan State has struggled, so maybe that's one to watch. Kentucky is on fire. I think they are. They finally matured, and they're starting to be the team people thought in the preseason. Michigan's maybe hit a bit of a lull after such a hot start, but they're still really good. North Carolina's catching fire. Houston, similar to Gonzaga, I don't know how many teams are on their schedule that are going to beat them. So even if you think Marquette is better, Houston probably doesn't have many losses left on their schedule. Now, Kansas is in a slide. Kansas is a team that Marquette could pass as far as seeding.
Yeah. Without Azubuike, they're just not good.
Yeah, without Azubuike, and then LeGerald Vick just left the team indefinitely, so they're hurting right now, but who knows, Kansas still finds a way to win the Big 12 more often than not, but this year just feels a little different to me. And then, you know, Purdue's pretty good, so, yeah, I don't know how much higher Marquette could get. You know, I guess my only concern would be maybe if you hit a bit of a lull here in the last 7 games and you drop 2 or 3 games that you're not supposed to, then you fall out of that protected seed range. Maybe you get shipped out west, and that's something you don't want. But yeah, I'm hoping Marquette can just stay in this 3-4 range for a while. Maybe if you get lucky and get really hot, maybe you could fight your way for a 2, but I still think that would be kind of tough.
Well, one of the things that's interesting is the team sheets, the NCAA team sheets, which is theoretically what the committee looks at, the central repository of all the information, are published through the games yesterday. So it includes the Villanova win, and I went out and found it. And so Marquette is currently in the net rating as a 21. KenPom, they're 29. BPI, which is the ESPN analytic, I think is 29. Their KPI is 14. So all that to say, what's interesting is that the seeding that we saw published on Saturday, you know, with the exception of the Villanova win, had all this information and still kind of seeded Marquette ahead of where the analytics theoretically say they would be, right? So clearly the committee is, you know, the committee is using analytics as a guidepost, but they are not the determining factor, right? I think they're basically saying, hey, look, Marquette's – and I think it was either Paint Touches or Crackside. Actually, I think it was Alan Bukowski on Crack Sidewalks that kind of went through and looked at, you know, who has the most quadrant one wins, and Marquette is, is like third or fourth in the country in terms of quadrant one wins with now seven, right? The only one that has more quadrant one wins, I think, is Kansas and somebody else that have eight. You know, so the quality of the resume is pretty good. So you just don't screw up and you're doing okay. Now, the one thing that does suck is that home loss to St. John's. Not only did we lose to St. John's, but that gives us our first and only quadrant two loss. So we have no quadrant three losses, no quadrant four losses. But we do have a quadrant two loss now because of St. John's, which is another reason to your point of like St. John's drag your butt into the tournament so that we can get a better record out of it. If St. John's were to just perform, they, you know, that would look better on paper if they, you know, maybe they move up to a quadrant one loss or something. But
we're trying to help you, St. John's. Yeah, we really are.
Yeah.
Just do your part. Just treat every team like their Marquette. Hey, Phil, something you threw out on Twitter, I think this is a good time to bring it up. You kind of asked, of Marquette's four losses, which one is maybe you'd like a do-over? Like, if you could get the Infinity Gauntlet and get the Time Stone, turn things back and try one again, which one would you like a do-over?
Yeah, I struggled with this. I think the one that I would probably take back is, and it's maybe counterintuitive, I would take back the Indiana loss. Just because I mean, Indiana has had lots of issues and they just don't look good of late. And I know it's just only one game. But that Indiana loss, just if we could have turned that into, you know, we'd be 8-2 in quadrant one. I think there's more confidence going in. I think that's the one I take, though. The home St. John's game, again, now that it's a quadrant two loss, that's maybe another one to look at. But I don't know which one.
Yeah,
which
I think
one
that's
would you take
the way
back?
I would go. I would like to see Marcus's last shot against St. John's fall and have that be a win, because then right now we're tied for first in the Big East.
Right.
Because I think that's the tiebreaker for me. Because, you know, none of the losses are bad, really. But, you know, I guess, talking quadrants, the home loss to St. John's is the quote-unquote worst. You know, losing to Kansas on a neutral court, you live with that. Losing at Indiana, even though Indiana has really hit the skids here lately, although the win at Michigan State helped, but then they go out and lose a couple more and kind of like lose some of the goodwill from that. But still, going on the road, losing in Bloomington, you can get over that. Yeah, if I could reset and have one go the other way, I think I'd like to have that St. John's home loss back. But it's not so bad that I'm just looking at it as just, wow, that's a real season ruiner. It's not, but there's only four losses to choose from, so if I'm going to pick one, I'll take that one.
Yeah, well, and not to relive that painful moment, but boy, that Marcus shot, I sure wish he had gone with the thing on that one. It looked like...
That's what I think some of us were saying is... It seems like he like shied away from contact, and I think he's at the point where he's got the kind of respect nationally that I think he can get that call if he just leans into the guy, but there was absolutely no contact at all, so there was nothing to call. Whereas if he like he kind of he leaned to the right away from the contact to get a try to get a clean look off and get the ball up, whereas I think if he would have just leaned into the defender a little bit with not making it blatant, yeah, I think he could have done his own the thing, hashtag the thing, and gotten that call, and he'd gone to the free throw line and hit free throws to win the game. But yeah, I'm kind of with you on that.
So yeah, I mean, and that probably makes the most sense, and it'll be interesting to see where the rankings come out tomorrow in terms of where Marquette is, because obviously a big, yes, it's at home, but beating in Villanova is a big result, even though they lost to St. John's. So do they move? I saw Seth Davis tweeting out, and this is one I don't understand, tweeted out his rankings, and he had Marquette at 13, which would move them back a little bit, but then had Villanova at 12. So I don't understand how that works, how a team that you beat moves ahead of you. Plus Wisconsin was 11. And I'm like, how does Wisconsin accrue all these losses and still end up near the top 10? Like, they're just not that good, I don't think.
Yeah, and did they or did they not lose over the weekend?
I think they lost, right?
They lost to Michigan, right?
Yeah, they lost to Michigan.
It was a road game, but
yeah.
not that you would punish for a team too much for losing at Michigan, but yeah, Marquette may slide back a couple spots. They may drop out of the top 10, but they're not going to drop much farther than 13. If I were to make a guess, because by the time everybody's listening to this, new AP poll's probably out already. Maybe they're 12th.
Right.
But that's fine. I'm more concerned with bracket projections at this point than I am whether you're in the top 10 or top 12. So if Marquette slides a little bit, fine. Get over it and get back on the horse and get a few more wins. Now, coming off a big win like that, Phil, the thing you want to avoid is the Valley game.
Yeah.
You know, you just coming off the emotional roller coaster, you don't want to let your guard down and come out and play lousy. And who's Marquette play this week? Oh, crap. It's DePaul.
Oh, crap. At DePaul, the House of Horrors.
Yes. A DePaul team that, dare I say, may be starting to believe a little bit.
Yeah. Hey, they're 5-6, and I was going to mention it earlier, but the thing that kind of – I mean, Marquette is now officially the hunted instead of the hunter, being second – a clear second in the Big East. And Marquette, and you know, when you talk about the other teams in the Big East needing to make the tournament and make a mark, the only and best way for them to do that is to beat Villanova and Marquette, which means they're going to be getting Marquette's best shot, or Marquette's going to be getting every team's best shot from here on out, with DePaul up next in DePaul, where things are dicey to say the least. So here we go again with another get the Pepto-Bismol, because it's going to be angsty.
The hashtag's been going around. DLTD. Don't lose to DePaul, Marquette Nation. They've made that kind of a thing. We're going to make it a thing. It's going to be a thing. Don't lose to DePaul. But yeah, this is, I'm not going to lie. I'm nervous just for that reason. But, Marquette got it done the last time against DePaul, it was relatively comfortable win, but now we're going to their place.
Yep. You got to think though that the Hauser. Well, I mean, the thing that makes me nervous is DePaul did a really good job of defending Marcus. Last time. I mean, DePaul is a longish team, right? I mean, their shortest player is that gets major minutes is typically 6'3", 6'4", right? So they can put length on Marcus, which, you know, as good as he is, he simply can't outdo length most of the time. So that's going to put pressure on everybody else to score. But, the Housers went 2-for-10 against Villanova. They got to recover from that, right? Like they didn't play particularly well against St. John's either. So the Housers are due for a comeback, right? That's got to show up against DePaul of all teams, right? He says, hopefully.
Yeah, they're not going to be quiet forever. You would hope they would come around, and yeah, it wasn't the best week for them shooting wise, but yeah, we kind of talked about it with the last matchup. I mean, DePaul does present a few problems. They do have enough length that they can defend well enough, even though their defense isn't that highly ranked on KenPom. It's 118, but they are pretty good on the glass, pretty good offensive rebounding team. Or a pretty good defensive rebounding team. And they're a pretty decent offensive rebounding team as well. Marquette's a little better with defensive rebounding. I think defensive rebounding is just about the same for both. On KenPom, Marquette is 24th in defensive rebounding. DePaul is 25th. So
yep.
Just about the same. Well, DePaul's offensive rebounding is actually pretty good, top 50 in the country, while Marquette's is more middle of the road at 185. And, the last time they played Max Strus really shot the ball poorly, and maybe some of that could be credited to the way the Housers defended him, and I think maybe they had Sakar on him a little bit too, but he had one of those nights when he was just throwing up brick after brick, and maybe if that could happen again, yeah, Marquette's going to be just fine, but you worry what happens if maybe he turns it up a notch and hits a few more shots in his own gym. Then, yeah, you get concerned maybe that could go the other way on you, but I still look at it as, Marquette's still a better team, and they should just go down there and win. KenPom has it at 64% chance for Marquette to win this one. Marquette's only an underdog, according to KenPom, one game the rest of the way, and that's, of course, at Villanova in a few weeks. So, I mean, it's a bit of a quick turnaround coming off an emotional win over Nova, but as long as you get past this one, you got a full week and change to recover. and just kind of refocus for the home stretch, the final six games, and trying to make a run at a Big East tournament or a Big East championship, because then you got Butler and Providence standing between you and the rematch at Villanova, where you may presumably Villanova could be looking at his chance to maybe put the Big East away, extend their lead to two, depending on what happens between now and then, or maybe you get a chance to tie the Big East race up, or maybe even take the lead if Villanova drops one between now and then. But it's important to get this one, because you'd like to keep your momentum going, and you just don't want to drop to a team that you're simply better than. I mean, you know, DePaul is 97th in KenPom. I mean, they're better than they have been. I'll give them that. DePaul is, you know, we like to make jokes about DePaul, but they're not the joke that they have been the past couple of years. They're still not a great team, but they're not pitiful.
Well, and they're laden with seniors and experience and like I said, length. So it's again, it's a tougher matchup for Marquette, much like St. John's. If I recall, the first matchup, Marquette did not shoot particularly well. So again, you know, hopefully they shoot better. Again, I don't know what the crowds have been at the Wind Trust for, you know, it's a new arena for DePaul. You know, I think one of the things, even though it was a house of horrors that you could count on at the Rosemont, was that the crowd would be at least 50% Marquette fans. I don't know if that'll be the case this year in the new arena or not. I don't know if DePaul fans are, you know, kind of coming out of the woodwork because, hey, they don't suck this year. It's going to be interesting. And with only one game on the schedule this week and having the weekend off, you would think you could get the team realigned and revisioned for this DePaul game and say, hey, let's just go win this game. Let's throw everything we have at it, and then we'll get some rest. But, I mean, it wouldn't be a devastating loss, but it would really put, you know, I think that a loss to DePaul, even on the road, would
Always makes you mad.
Not only would it make you mad, but I certainly think it endangers that protected seating, right? I mean,
you don't want to drop too many more because I mean, there's just such a cluster of teams, I think, between that, you know, the 3 line and the 5 line. That, you know, if you stumble too much, you don't want to fall back to that 5 spot.
Right,
you want
exactly.
To hang around 3-4. So, but yeah, I still think Marquette should win. I wouldn't shock me if Marquette plays terrible, because Marquette teams have done that for so long, going back to Buzz, Crean, even maybe even before that. But going down there has just never been fun. Hopefully, there will be enough Marquette fans to be loud, support the team, and you know, you mentioned about being focused, Phil. If this team can't be focused game to game at this point in the season, knowing what's on the line, something's wrong. I have no doubt that they're going to be dialed in and focused every game the rest of the way. Does that mean they're going to win every game? No. There are probably going to be some games that just don't go their way. But this team knows what's on the line. They are experiencing levels of success that this group has never experienced. And really, the Marquette program as a whole hasn't experienced in about 5 years, 6 years, I guess, since 2013.
Right. Yeah. Well, and you would think with that St. John's loss, that would be all the refreshing that the team needs, right? I mean, they only played 15 minutes of good basketball in that game. You would think that Wojo will lean on that heavily, you know, and say, okay, great, you beat Villanova. It's kind of the Herb Brooks, great, you beat the Russians. If you don't go out and beat Finland, it's not going to, you know, nobody's going to effing care kind of speech from the 80 Lake Placid games. So you would think he'd be able to lean heavily on that to get the team focused and ready for what could be a tough DePaul game on the road.
I love you busting out the Herb Brooks reference on the show.
Hey, it's great movie like and that. A great story.
Fantastic story.
I just wish I could give the actual quote instead of the pseudo quote, since it was so awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we could technically swear. Nobody's really monitoring us here, but whatever. I appreciate you keeping it clean for the kids.
Yeah, we are a family show. We know there's like 6 kids that listen to us.
Yeah, even though I may curse from time to time, they get over it. They're going to hear those words eventually.
Correct.
You know, before we get out of here, speaking of kids, there were a lot of recruits on campus for the Villanova game. I thought there would be because, you know, this is the type of atmosphere, you know, the college coaches, they want to have recruits, you know, check in all the time. But especially for a game like National Marquette Day against Villanova, you know, that's when the coaching staff will really kind of start, you know, sending out text messages, getting in DMs and say, hey, you know, if we'd love to have you here. It's going to be a big game. If you want to come for an unofficial visit, great. If you want to make an official visit, even better. But, you know, there were some notable recruits that were on campus for that game. Dawson Garcia, I think he was actually on an official visit. He's a 2020 guy. He's like top 30 in the class. He's a 6'10 center from Minnesota. Marquette's done pretty well in Minnesota since Wojo's been the coach. The Ellensons both came from there. Theo John came from there. And Sakar is from Minnesota. So he was on an official visit. Jalen Johnson and his brother were both there. Jalen Johnson, we talked about him before. He's a five-star guy for 2020. You know, if I had to guess, he's probably going to end up at Duke or Kentucky, but Marquette's still in it. I mean, he and his brother are apparently at five-star form all the time because they're right there in Milwaukee, and they probably have an open invitation. Wojo probably tells them, hey, anytime you want to come, let us know. We got tickets for you.
You'd be dumb not to.
Yeah. And then Jamari Sibley, who's a guy Marquette has been recruiting, he's another 2020 guy. So Marquette really kind of making a push in the 2020 class, as they should, because they only have one scholarship available for now for 2019. And, you know, unless Samir Torrance reclassifies, you know, that scholarship is probably going to remain open, although there's another thought I have on that that we can touch on in a minute. But it looks like they're definitely making some headway with some 2020 guys, you know, have their eyes set on some, you know, highly recruited kids, guys in the top 50, maybe, you know, a couple guys in the top five who maybe, you know, you may not get those guys, but at least they're trying. So I'm glad they were able to put on a show and get a nice win for those recruits who were in attendance on Saturday.
Yeah, it was a great atmosphere for it. I mean, it's, you know, if a recruit doesn't come here, it's not because, well, the Marquette just doesn't play in a great arena or with a great atmosphere for those big games where I look like a star. So, yeah, it's good. I mean, it's a case of always be recruiting, right? Because you never know who's gonna stay, who's gonna go, what opens up, and who's gonna develop, and so I think getting those guys on and getting them in the building is a great thing, and it shows that Wojo's keeping options open to you know, if this year isn't the deep run, you know, you sure hope next year is, right?
Yeah, you know, for. You know, it's great to shoot for the stars for a guy like Jalen Johnson, who, again, most five-star guys in the state of Wisconsin do leave the state, and they end up at Duke or Kentucky, you know, like Tyler Herro did. Trying to think, you know, Diamond Stone left the state. He went to Maryland. Obviously, Henry Ellenson, he stayed in state. But then there was there's a kid. He went to UCLA. J.P. Tokoto went to North Carolina. So a lot of those guys do leave the state. But when you're ranked in the top 10, it's a good chance to maybe convince one of those five stars who has all these out-of-state offers from Hall of Fame coaches to maybe consider staying in state, unlike some of previous five stars. So while I'm not saying they're going to get Jalen Johnson, at least Marquette has put itself in a position to have a shot.
Right.
Yeah, and yeah. Another thing I will say on Dawson Garcia, I think that's a guy who is certainly gettable. I mean, he's a great player, but he's not you know, top two or three in the country, at least not that highly rated yet. But he's a top 30 guy, a guy who, you know, Marquette, by the time he gets on campus in 2020, is probably going to be hurting for some size, because by the time he gets there, Ed Morrow will be gone, Matt Helt will be gone. Who knows what Ike Eke's future holds? Theo John would be in his senior season.
Yep. Joey will be a junior.
Yeah, and Joey would be in his junior season. We're just going to need some size in that 2020 class. And if they could get Dawson Garcia, that would be huge. And I mentioned one other thing to keep an eye on in the 2019 class. Don't get too excited yet, folks, but this at least bears monitoring. I'm sure you're aware of some things going on at the University of Arizona. They've already fired two assistant coaches, including former Marquette assistant Mark Phelps. It seems like the university is turning up the heat a little bit on Sean Miller. I don't know if he's going to get fired, if they're going to force a resignation, if there's, you know, if there's going to be a trial or anything that could affect his job status, but I'll, if something does happen with Sean Miller and he is and he is fired at Arizona, keep an eye on Nico Mannion. Because you may remember him. We talked about him on this podcast back in October, in November. Five-star kid. He's from Phoenix. He committed to his dream school, the Arizona Wildcats, back in November. But if Arizona gets in any kind of trouble, if they lose their coach, if they get hit with probation and they can't go to the tournament next year or something like that, who knows? Maybe he asks out of his commitment and takes a look at his options again, and then Marquette may re-enter the picture for him. Again, don't get too excited yet because there's a lot of steps that has to happen between now and then, and I could even see a situation where Arizona fires Sean Miller and still keeps Nico Mannion if, like, say, they hire a guy like Luke Walton to come back to campus, former Arizona player himself, who may be done with the Lakers pretty soon here. So there's a lot of things that need to happen between now and then, but it at least bears monitoring. Maybe keep your finger on the pulse there, see what happens at Arizona.
I have no doubt that either Wojo or Stan, as permitted, will be, you know, dropping in, maybe not dropping in the DMs, but, you know, a text message here and there. You know, hey, Nico, how are things? How's it going?
Just text his dad. Say, hey, man, how's it going?
Yeah, just checking in, seeing what's going on, everything.
Just letting you know we got tickets for if you ever want to catch a game.
Yeah, we got tickets here. You can jump right in. We'll get you into the new arena. So it's again ABR, always be recruiting. So we'll see what comes of that.
I think he's signed, so you can't actually have him on campus for a visit until he officially decommits or asks out. But again, if anything happens there, it probably wouldn't even be until April or May that something would happen that would. He'd have to go through the process of asking out of his letter of intent and things like that. But again, not to get too excited, but just keep an eye on that one. The bigger thing to keep an eye on that could happen is anybody in the 2020 class, you know, with Garcia just coming off his visit. I think there were a couple other guys that I didn't mention. I'm just going through the tweets here that I saw about some visitors. But yeah, being in the top 10, Phil, is never a bad thing if you're trying to land some five-star, high four-star guys and try to, you know, keep the momentum going. Because obviously after next year, when you're definitely losing Marcus Howard and Sam Hauser and Ed Morrow and Sakar Anum, there's going to be some rebuilding that has to go on. It would be nice to have some talented freshmen coming in that 2021 season. Because if this year's looking good and next year could potentially be better. And so hopefully you get some talented freshmen coming in to keep this thing going as opposed to having two good years and then taking a big step back.
Yeah, you want to reload. You don't want to rebuild. And I don't think the program's yet at a point where we're going to necessarily be in a reloading position, but it'd be nice to sure try. And Wojo, I mean, look at the talent he's acquired from year one to you know, year five now, right? Yes, the Big East has taken a little bit of a step back generally, but, I mean, Marquette is right in the thick of things going for a Big East championship, which, you know, I don't know in year two or year three we were going to say that. I mean, Al, we were talking about we'd give an arm for Marquette to be in the top 75 defensively for KenPom, and they're right now, I think last I saw, 39. You know, so things might just be coming together.
I love it when a plan comes together. I love it when we have good basketball to talk about.
Oh, it's so much nicer, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great not having to talk about Doomsday on this podcast.
Or being Team Bubble Watch.
Doomsday will be back next week.
Yeah. Yeah, as long as we're not Team Bubble Watch, I'm good with it.
Yeah, I'm good with it too. Before we get out of here, any predictions, Phil? The DePaul game?
I think it's going to be a win for Marquette, but again, I think it's going to be tight. It's probably going to be 8 or 9 points, but likely free throws for Marquette at the end of game, creating that separation. Maybe they're up 4 or 5, you know, in the last minute and get fouled to try and close out the game. So I think it's going to be another little bit of a, you know, little bit of an esophagus burner, but ultimately a Marquette win.
Yeah, I'll go with a good old-fashioned rock fight, a 63-59 win.
Okay, yeah, I'm with you there.
All right. Looks like KenPom is a spread at 4, so about that. But don't bet your money on DePaul. Don't bet this game at all. Wait for the next one.
just stay away. Hell, watch it on tape delay if you have to.
Yeah, this is a stay away for sure. But hey, as always, we appreciate you listening here on Scrambled Eggs. Everybody, please hit us up on Twitter with your feedback. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF 23. You can hit up Crack Sidewalks as the team handle. Go to cracksidewalks.com. We post the podcast there. You can leave comments on cracksidewalks.com. And also be sure to go to Apple Podcasts, rate, review, and subscribe so you always get the podcasts directly to your phone. And go to the Scrambled Eggs Facebook page. We post the podcasts there as well. Phil, final thoughts?
Hey, let's just don't lose to DePaul. Saying it again, don't lose to DePaul.
Don't lose to DePaul. See you soon, balloons, everybody.